With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Rosamie Mark. Oh, sorry.
Having some water. Treat, oh, how the other half live.
Having a bit of water.
Us sitting here recording this, what you don't see, listeners, is that sometimes we'll have a drink of water.
I know.
Right. Wrestle me, Pete.
Wrestle me, Mark.
Wonderful news.
Don't we sound lovely?
And refreshed.
Refreshed.
Delightful. Do you know what's funny? I keep on thinking to myself, you know, like when we do this, I sort of go, I'm super aware that the end of Wrestle Me, you know, in one form is you know, it's on the horizon. Yeah. We can certainly see it. I mean, people will say, oh, you're just doing this to pad it out. Nothing is pad it out. We're actually making excellent content. But I sort of do think to myself, oh, I've slightly sort of, you know, am I a bit wrestled out?
Okay, yeah.
And when I watched this, for example, Wrestle Kingdom 11, it really, really reminded me about how I'm a bit wrestled out of stuff that I don't want to watch. This, I watched and I was like, I am wrestled in.
In, again, yeah. I actually want to watch this. This would be a choice I would make.
I have noticed recently, and I've talked about this before in the little newsletter we do on Patreon, but there were a few weeks ago I was saying, look, it's really difficult to find any good wrestling merch at the minute because everyone seems to have just gone, wrestling is really, really worth a lot of money. So all the stuff I like from the 90s and, you know, anything from sort of, you know, before then, the 80s, everything was just like, everything started at 30 quid.
This is like the Berkhamsted, Everything Berkhamsted Marketplace on Facebook. They think that a mobile phone cover for a mobile phone that doesn't exist anymore from 10 years ago is worth £5.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, Berkhamsted, it's fucking not. It's not.
But
ridiculous.
Look, I thought to myself, you know, it's a shame because, you know, that sort of makes me ebb a bit in my thrill of wrestling. But I tell you what, Pete, in the last month or so, I've been back on eBay looking around. I just click on wrestling memorabilia.
Clicky click.
You know, the whole thing. I like to see a spread of stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know what I want. I'll only know when I see it.
I almost bought some J League batteries. Batteries, every club in the J League won from 2 years ago had a battery. But you buy that and you sort of go, they're going to leak eventually.
Yeah, that's the problem. They're finite. Yeah. It's a bit like buying food, you know. I was sad the day that I ate all of my WWF Superstars 1991 cereal. Because I remember thinking, it'd be great if this was just complete.
Yes.
But I ate it.
You ate it
I
all.
Ate it, and I think that was the right decision
was
to make.
Was it delicious?
Oh, it was so
it was
nice.
It so delicious.
What
John Cena
in the 90s, what was Britain's like biggest cereal? Like Cocoa Pops. That was the most extravagant one you could get.
You can get Lucky Charms. Lucky Charms for a bit, and then
imported. I think they were made by Purina, who also make cat nibbles. And you know how exciting cats go for cat nibbles? Oh, they love them. These were the same. They were so sweet and tasty.
Nice.
Oh, amazing. I do regret eating them now, because I think that would have been a great one-off when we were bored, would be for us to eat some vintage wrestling cereal.
It'll be like
cereal.
Those men who eat old rations. But the rations are designed to last a long time. Yeah. Cereal isn't.
No, that's true. Mm. The last couple of, I'd say, 3 weeks on eBay for wrestling stuff, everyone is getting rid of it. And the people who are getting rid of it are the people who have got great collections of like rare stuff.
I mean, you are very much kind of captivated by other people's misery, clearly, on this. Because people are losing their jobs.
Very much so.
And you are hoovering all that good stuff.
Hoovering up good stuff, Pete. Or helping them.
Helping them.
Pay their mortgages.
You're very much the Marcus Rashford of wrestling memorabilia.
Yeah, I am. I mean, you know, am I feeding hungry kids if the people I buy a No Holds Barred original cinema poster off have got kids that they need to feed? Then yes, I am.
If they've seen the lady.
Yes, I am. I bought some stuff off, I won't name him because it's not fair, but he's a very, very respected British wrestling historian.
Right.
If you know anything about British wrestling, you'll know
exactly
there's only one.
But
I noticed he put some stuff up the other day. Good stuff. He put up some, you know, really, really hard to find original like 80s figures and stuff in their packaging. Mm. Not for me.
Didn't buy in a garage sale a big bag full of 50 of them.
They, you know, they're 200 quid things like that going for and everything. All very nice. Yeah. But I mean, you know, I don't pay 200 quid.
No.
But I did buy a brilliant handheld WrestleMania game from 1989.
Oh, those LCD ones.
That's right, yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah. One that I didn't have, sort of came out slightly before Sky got behind wrestling in this country.
Right.
So you didn't get that here.
Yes.
You didn't make it over here.
Mm.
Oh, wow.
Lovely.
A Rowdy Roddy Piper original single, I'm Your Man.
Nice.
Pick that up.
They keep on suggesting Rowdy Roddy Piper films to me on like IMDb. Every time I Google for anything, they'll suggest, do you want to watch Roddy Roddy Piper? Do you want to watch his last role in a shitty horror film that nobody watched?
There is definitely something we should do about watching some of those terrible.
Starting with Money Plane. Starting with fucking Money Plane.
Quite a lot of people I know now are obsessed with Money Plane.
Yeah.
Edge, big starring role.
Come on.
Can only be good. Because
Ed Frasier is the big Money Plane guy.
He's the villain.
An awful speech. Yeah.
It went so well for Edge that he immediately returned to the WWE just as that came out. I can only imagine that's an indication of its quality.
Yeah.
But yeah, all I'm saying is, look, if you're out there and you're like, oh, you know, I've got an amazing wrestling collection. Mm. I want to sell it for pennies. Mm. Just get in touch. Go on eBay. I'll find it on eBay. Oh, I don't want that guy to have it. He does that podcast. He's sort of full of himself about the merch and everything. I'll just put it on eBay. I'll find it.
Yeah.
Who's going to bid more than me? No one. Because I am willing to go for objects that I reckon are worth probably about 10 quid. I easily go 16. Just for the convenience, Pete.
Yeah.
It's my wife doesn't know about any of this.
she wouldn't listen to the third show. This is the fourth show. It's the fourth show of the New Japan
Pete,
show.
She doesn't even listen to the Strictly Come Dancing podcast I do. And I only did that because it was continually on in our house. And I thought, I can make some money out of this.
Yeah.
She does not even listen to that one.
Oh, really? I didn't even know that existed. What is this?
The Curse of Strictly.
Oh.
It's Britain's most popular unofficial Strictly Come Dancing podcast. The other ones have all stopped. Because, I mean, the figures are negligible.
Paltry.
They are paltry, very paltry. The other day, Liz said to me, who is that at the door? And, you know... You know it's going to
be. It was Clara Amthor. She had a problem with something you said.
Yeah, I said, the postman. And she went, what was it? And I said,
a present for you for the future.
TSB card.
TSB card. A bank that has not existed for a while, surely.
Why did you have to, what did you do? I said, I had to sign for it. And she went, a card from, I said, like a credit card. She was like, oh, right, yeah, sorry, okay.
So good. Why do you need a credit card? Are you buying more wrestling figures?
It wasn't a card for the TSB.
It was the DDP.
It was a 12-inch Sting figure.
Yeah!
I won!
What's that in your trousers? Ignore it.
Let us get to something far more adult and grown up.
Yeah.
Japanese wrestling.
Yes.
We are going through Wrestle Kingdom 11 from 2017. Very much Japanese WrestleMania, but better than American WrestleMania. We are now on the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship match between Kushida and Hiromu Takahashi. I have a vague feeling that Hiromu Takahashi is now one of your favourite wrestlers ever.
Let me just skip. Yes. Hang on. Which one?
He is the time bomb. Hiromu Takahashi. Reddish hair.
Yes, no. I loved, there was loads of bicycle kicks. This is where this started to get really good for me. It's actually Kushida that I was obsessed with.
Good.
Because he was dressed like Marty McFly.
He is.
And he continues. I Googled him and he's continued to dress like Marty McFly. What's that about then?
Well, he was in a tag team called the Time Splitters with a guy called Alex Shelley.
Oh, like the video game Time Splitters.
Yeah.
Nice.
And they had a sort of futuristic gimmick where I think he got into Back to the Future. I think if you're like Japanese, when you watch something like Back to the Future, I never know whether it's like, oh yeah, it's mainstream in the same way it would be in Britain, or whether you go, it's like an art house film. I went to see it. this is absolutely true. I was in France and I went to see Avengers Endgame.
Right.
No, Thor Ragnarok.
Right.
I went to see at the cinema.
Yeah.
And so every Wednesday night they have a screening of the film in its original form. And
what is the original form of Thor Ragnarok?
It's in English.
Oh, right.
And it has French subtitles underneath it. So like when people are like, I'm really into foreign films, subtitled foreign films. If you're French, that is Thor Ragnarok, right? And so I was speaking to a guy and I said, oh, you know, is it easy to follow? Because it's like, there's a lot of sort of jokes and lingo and stuff like that. And he was like, no, he says, I find it it's very good for my learning English. I understand a bit of it, he said, but I can always look at the subtitles like that. And I was like, some of the subtitles were literally like the Hulk going, rah! But if you're Japanese, something like Back to the Future, it might seem like it's a great art house movie.
Yeah.
It's about the duality of, you know, past and present. And like, no, it's just Marty McFly. But he's sort of dressed like that. And I wonder if it seems like a really sort of, what an educated young man.
Well, in the third one, he is fired by a Japanese man, I seem to recall, Martin Fly's dad.
They did not release the third one in Japan. No, very
flying
negative.
Flying train. Flying Shinkansen.
Kushida is fantastic. He is a beloved wrestler. One of those guys who I can't think whether or not he's ever had a run as a heel. He's got such a friendly face.
Yeah, and a lovely body warmer.
Oh, a great body warmer. He's
got LA Lights LED shoes, which is enjoyable. He does. Light up shoes.
He looks great in this, actually. Yeah. I think he's underestimated. But he's been around for quite a long time in New Japan. He started off, weirdly, in MMA. And he had an amazing record. He was unbeaten.
Too lovely for MMA.
Six wins, two draws, and no losses.
I find that very surprising, Mark.
Really is. I think he's young enough that his face was soft. His bones hadn't solidified. He was able to, you know, bounce back from it. While he was in MMA, he also worked for Tokyo Sports Magazine,
right?
Which is it's sort of hard to explain how important the publications are in Japan when it comes to sports. So I think they are the longest running now weekly wrestling magazine, which is called, there's Gong and there's Weekly Pro Wrestling. Mm. Two magazines. Wrestling magazines do not exist in the rest of the world anymore.
Yeah.
They've all disappeared.
Yeah.
And in Japan, they still go.
Yeah, the paper trade still does a, you still see them in shops.
Yeah, working for Tokyo Sports would be like working for, I mean, it's hard to give an equivalent. It's like working for the BBC, only it's a magazine form. So he's doing MMA, working for Tokyo Sports Magazine. He was also at university. So
it's a work ethic, isn't it?
Yeah, he's a bit Asker in that respect, where you sort of go, you've got a lot of strings to your bow. And oddly, I think those sort of things make you a better wrestler.
Right.
Having options in any job gives you more sort of like, well, I can always walk away from this and do that.
Yeah.
I think it does sort of mean that you're there because you want to be rather than, you know, there are no other options.
Yeah.
He's been with New Japan full time since about 2011. And he's just a perennial high level babyface, high level junior wrestler. Mm. He'd held the IWGP Championship on numerous occasions. He held the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team title on numerous occasions, especially with that Time Splitters. That is sort of his iconic tag team.
Time Splitters is such a good, I didn't even think, like, just two guys, I guess, playing a kind of, was the other one a bit Doc Brown?
Almost the same.
Right.
There is that thing about New Japan, that is in a gimmick is enough to have a name and a jazzy top. They do not let you do any more.
Yeah, no.
If you were like, I go back in, they'd be like, please leave, you know, with all due respect.
Well, we do see a very shoehorned, you wouldn't say it was shoehorned, but like a gimmick that comes out of nowhere for Kenny Omega later on.
Yes, yeah, very much so.
Less obtrusive than the one we've seen in WrestleMania of Terminator quite recently.
Yes, yeah. It's funny how everyone was obsessed with the Terminator at this point. Yeah, it's really odd.
Weird.
It's important to say, I think, at this point that nobody in the history of wrestling has ever done junior heavyweight matches as well as New Japan.
Mm.
And they do them so well because they make them so important. And when I say so important, they don't just go, these are as good as the big boy matches. They just go, this is something entirely unique. These people are at the top of the thing that they do.
Yeah.
There's less comparison. They were always very good about not putting the light heavyweights in with the heavyweights. They don't want to make them look bad. They don't want to, you know, have the heavyweights always win. So these guys, you're looking at guys who are good, but, you know, they can't hack it in the real world. Mm. They keep them quite separate. And what you get is this, again, another strand of pro wrestling developing that is just completely unique. This match is a perfect example of that, where you've got Kushida, who is this brilliant babyface, going up against the young and brash Hiromu Takahashi. The funny thing about that is in Japan, young and brash is like, you are the baddest boy in the history of the world. If you occasionally show a bit of disrespect, they are like, this guy is out of control and wild.
There was a guy who was arrested this week in, I think, Tokyo. He was, there's a new road rage law that came out under lockdown, and you can now arrest people on bikes if they go absolutely crazy.
Really?
And this guy, he would just ride down the street, and then he'd sort of veer into the path of other cars, and then at the last minute, check himself.
Yeah.
Risky. Risky little game.
Yeah.
But that guy, he was bad boy. He was a real loopy bad boy.
A real bad boy.
Real bad boy.
Hiromu Takahashi, he debuts in New Japan in 2010. Mm. He wrestles under his real name, and which is Hiromu Takahashi. He's going to change it in a bit.
Right.
I haven't just put that in. Like that's where it stops. He goes to Mexico in 2014 to CMLL, and he basically takes on, he has a mask, and he takes on the persona called Kaimatashi, and that's a Japanese supernatural demon's name.
Yeah.
And what he does there is he has a feud with another masked wrestler called Dragon Lee. And that puts them on the map. People begin going, though, these two guys in Mexico are having the most unbelievable rivalry. And their match is absolutely unbelievable. Mm. He returns to New Japan in late 2015 under the name Hiromu Takahashi. And he was a huge, huge star compared to when he'd left. Again and again, when you look at New Japan, what they do is they go to, they have people in there for a short while. And they go, you know what you need? You're going to be a big star. So what we need to do is get rid of you. You need to go somewhere else and learn, season yourself, learn a new skill, learn a new way of wrestling.
Yeah.
And what it does is it takes them out of the picture for 2 years so that when they come back, they're fresh. They did that with Jushin Liger. Jushin Liger went off to Britain. They do it with Hiromu Takahashi. He goes off to Mexico. They do it with Okada. He goes to America to learn. You know, they do it with everyone that they've got. And if they think you're going to be a big star, they basically kick you out. When Hiromu Takahashi comes back, he's in some ways the best example of this because nobody had really noticed he was there the first time. Mm. He goes, he makes a name for himself. By the time he comes back, he's a huge star. And what they have is nothing but fresh matches to do. So he comes back here and he's up against this perennial babyface in Kushida. And this match is just phenomenal. It's just phenomenal. It's so well delivered. There's such a good sort of like back and forth on it. The moves are unbelievable. There's a bit where he powerbombs Kushida quite early on off the, you know, Kushida is hanging onto the ropes on the wrong side of the ring, if you like. And Hiromu Takahashi is beneath him, and he pulls him down into a powerbomb onto the floor. And it makes a sickening hollow thud.
My hip would explode.
I can really picture it in my head exactly that moment now. I can't sort of get rid of it, you know. Oh, terrible. There's a bit where he does a head scissors on Kushida, where Kushida is on the ropes, and they sort of half roll out, but then they don't. And it's a fuck up. You know, it's not gone to plan. Mm. And again, New Japan, because of the way it's set up, people don't start going, you fucked up. And you don't go, oh, I'm out of the match bit now because I've remembered that it's all, you know, choreographed. It just seems like, yes, this is a physical contest. Of course, sometimes things they're going to try are going to go wrong. That's the nature of a true sport. The beauty of New Japan is by making itself more serious, it actually makes it easier to accept that it's, you know, real.
Yeah.
It just works so well. You'd think stuff like that where it goes wrong, you'd go, that's broken the spell because they're trying to be so serious. It doesn't at all. You just sort of go, that's a natural thing that happens in this sort of thing. It's a brutal match, this, as well. Just because they're junior heavyweights, there's no sense of going, they hit less hard. You know, they hit five times harder a lot of the time.
I wrote top raw bleepies. I don't know why I wrote, there was a lot of top raw bleepies guy.
There is some amazing stuff here. I mean, there's a bit where
Kushida opens with like a jump off the turnbuckle. I'm like, fucking hell, like Jesus.
By the time they get to the point where like Takahashi is just on the top turnbuckle and he's doing somersault dives, sentons onto Kushida, but he's not that bothered about whether he's going to get near him. No. It looks great.
So,
first one, you know, Kushida sort of, it grazes his hand and Kushida has just dropped. What? It must be at least 12, 13 feet.
You need to be
onto
caught.
Onto his back.
He forgets that he needs to be caught.
And he's straight back up and he's like, you know, that's exactly what wants to happen. Are you, how are you okay? I do not get it. There's just some amazing near falls as well with these incredible matches, you know, moves. Everything is all action from start to finish. There is no let up here. No. Even when they do those great big wipeout moves, they're just both getting up and getting straight back on with it.
That's what you notice with this whole show.
Really do.
People get spots and people go through tables. They're up in seconds.
Yeah.
And it's continuing. And again, the matches aren't as long and flabby as the WWE.
There is no fat on these. Mm. Even though the stuff that they're doing, I think in America, you'd be like, that's a high spot. So you have to give the audience time. You don't want to just, these are just absolute breakneck wars that keep on, have an amazing ability to build. Yeah. That's really the thing is you sort of go, what's this going to be like in 3 minutes if I'm this excited? And 3 minutes from then you're going, it's like this. I didn't know how that would happen, but here we are. Now they have a brilliant end here, which is just that Hiromu Takahashi does win the title. The reaction to a title change here is massive because in Japan, title has been protected and they're still the most important thing. Part of the thing that they're always gearing towards at every point is the sense that the belt represents the best person in the business. Mm. Something that's been entirely lost in American wrestling. It's a really useful tool. If you're always building towards that thing of going, this will peak with the title match, it's an easy, and the booking in New Japan is brilliant and innovative, but it's an easy thing to constantly be building towards. The end level of this game is the title match. Mm. And the true end game is the winning of that. In America, everyone wins it all the time. There is no sort of, the belts have been devalued so badly, and you can see how important they are to wrestling when you watch New Japan.
Yeah.
There's a reason for every match because everyone is trying to inch closer to that belt. And you really see it when Takahashi wins it. After so many years of belts meaning nothing, you watch a little bit of Japanese wrestling and you go, that belt means something.
Yeah.
Both of them come up as bigger stars because one of them has held it, one of them has won it, but they've both given everything they could to try and be the holder of that belt. Mm. It represents being the best. It's such an easy tool to use so long as you haven't ruined it.
Mm.
And it's a reminder. People always talk about the devaluing of belts. And you go, yeah, but I mean, it was, people like the stars and stuff like that. When you see New Japan, it all comes down to the belt. It's that journey to the belt. Wrestling in its purest, most basic form. And you realize how badly wrong you can do it.
But the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship title belt thing here is a cool, cool belt.
It is.
It's that beautiful chrome kind of like, it's stunning.
It's thick.
Yes.
Thick lettering.
Chunky.
As well. Really sort of, you want to bite it like a Yorkie.
Lovely.
They often will announce as well, you are the 73rd winner. And that will be
nice.
Something that carries you through. Again, heritage, making it a real sport.
Yeah.
All those things are there to help you forget the fact that it's predetermined. It's amazing. Takahashi would go on to introduce Daryl, who was a stuffed toy cat that he carried around with him. A bit like George the Animal Steel in about 1986. He had a soft toy called Mine.
Yes, I remember that, yes.
And Daryl was very, very popular. He never explained why he had it. It was never a big thing. Takahashi's whole Instagram would be just filled up with pictures of Daryl. Daryl would later get married to Carol before Daryl would be ripped apart in the ring by Bad Luck Fale. I believe there's a new cat that's come along who's red. I've seen him. But Daryl's, soft Daryl's, are one of the biggest sellers in the whole of New Japan's merchandise.
I like that. See, something that's not a t-shirt or a belt or something. Something
big, soft Daryl.
Yeah, something you could give to a child.
Yeah. Takahashi's career did take a hiatus. So in July 2018, at the G1 special, which was the American special that they did in San Francisco, Takahashi defended against Dragon Lee, who was the guy who back in Mexico he'd had that legendary feud with. Dragon Lee lost, but during the match he slightly botched a suplex that he does, and Takahashi had broken his neck. He'd managed to finish the match. He then he was out for just over a year,
right?
While he recovered,
he
came back for I think at the following year's Wrestle Kingdom. Which must have been not next year's, but the year after, against Will Ospreay,
right,
where he just did loads of moves. We landed on his head and neck. I mean, that was actually one of the harder matches to ever watch, really, knowing what he'd gone through.
Yeah.
He is doing fine. He's never quite been at the same level as he was when he came back here, when he was just red hot. But I think he's a brilliant wrestler. Kushida signed with the WWE in April 2019. He's in NXT at the minute. He's finding his feet. They're beginning to learn that, you can just, bring in Japanese stars and use them well.
Yeah.
rather than just sort of squander them and treat them like everyone else. He is, it seems to be doing better at the moment than he has for the rest of his run. So nice to see he hasn't changed his gimmick in any way. He is still just Kushida. We wish him all the very best.
I like the fact that every, I kind of started to notice around about this match, every wrestler who loses gets an ice pack.
Yeah.
At the back. And it's like, it's so funny. I wonder if it's the same ice pack. Lovely.
This is absolutely worth saying, looking at my notes now. So I don't think there's ever been a show that has had a better run of matches than Kushida versus Takahashi.
Yeah.
You then go on to Shibata versus Goto. You then go on to Naito versus Tanahashi. Mm. And then you have the main event of Okada versus Omega. Though, if you're going to like go, oh, I can't really be bothered to watch this Wrestle Kingdom thing. I don't like the Japanese or, you know, I meant the language from the people. you know, then if you do sort of need to only watch half of it, start with that that light heavyweight match.
It's an astonishing match. Watch it through the rest.
It's just nuts. The next match number eight is the never openweight champion Katsuyori Shibata versus Hiroki Goto. What did you make of this?
Yeah, I think probably this last match, but also this one, it was just, this is where it all started to click. It was a situation where nothing, there's no extraneous parts. There's very little interference from outside. You know, even in the main event, like there's a little bit of interference, but not really. There's just a couple of tables getting set up and people are chatting and stuff. But in this one, like, again, it's perfect. There's no dicking about. There's no long promos. There's no kind of like, I don't need to know the story necessarily, because to be quite frank, if you are watching wrestling every day, fine. You know all of the ins and outs and how the story writers have managed to get there, but in this situation, like, I don't need them.
You don't.
So for watching like every show every year, I don't need the exposition that we get from the WWE.
Yeah,
and it doesn't. And this show, if you'd have put any exposition, it would be about 6 hours long. But this was pure, unadulterated wrestling.
It's amazing, isn't it? There's something I think about this match, which is, it's worth me saying, and I think this is heresy to a lot of people, Katsuyori Shibata is not a wrestler that I particularly enjoy watching the matches on.
Right.
He's very stiff. He is very much a sort of a throwback to the mid-90s, where, you know, the wrestlers were very tough but sort of unflashy and relied more on taking a pummeling and coming back rather than, you know, great psychology or sort of, you know, smart moves. Hiroki Goto, big man who never quite broke through to the top echelons. He is also one of those guys who I slightly, if it's someone I like and they're against Goto, I'll be like, I might just skip this one. They are two quite meat and potatoes wrestlers. And right. I don't mean that in a derogatory way. It's just that is a style that I've seen a lot of over the years and I can find it a bit straightforward.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over 3 glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
But this, I would say, as a pure wrestling match, I think it's almost impossible to beat. And I think for both of them, something magic happens in this match. They had known each other for a long time. So they were at high school together, which is sort of fascinating. Shibata is, his nickname is The Wrestler, because he is nothing more than that. and I think, you know, he is the very best that the wrestler can be. Mm. He debuted in New Japan in 1999. He was alongside fellow rookies Hiroshi Tanahashi and Shinsuke Nakamura. They were known as the new Three Musketeers. So they were replacing the early 90s version, which was Keiji Muto, Masa Chono, and Shinya Hashimoto. Mm. So they were three guys who New Japan were like, you are going to be the stars of the next generation. He has a sort of gimmicklessness to his gimmick, which is he's a bit like Antonio Inoki in the 70s. He has black trunks, he has black boots, and he comes out with a sort of towel around him. He's like a really old-fashioned wrestler. He is very famous for being stiff, and he is stiff in the ring. Gives him a sense of being real compared to some of the other people, you know, who are around.
Yeah.
He also seems to have a sort of mean streak, which is part of his character, and I think part of who he is. And there's a slight thing in the mean streak that I sometimes find his matches cross over from being pro wrestling to something that's more like a cross between MMA and wrestling. Mm. So even though you're in the parameters of the predetermined, I think sometimes the moves that he's doing are a bit too real.
Right.
It's a funny thing about, I don't necessarily want to see shoot matches. Mm. I want to see wrestling. That's what it says on the market.
But you'd like to get up to the line a little.
I don't mind not knowing.
Right.
It's when I go, he's actually just punching him as hard as he can. You know, Shibata seems like the sort of person who is more than happy to dish it out and take it back.
Yeah.
But there is a part of me where I go, it's a fundamental part of wrestling that you don't just go.
It's half the craft, isn't it?
Exactly.
Really.
This is no craft. Look, watch me do it.
You
know,
ow!
You know, exactly.
Mom,
that.
Just hit
I was wrestling you. In 2000, and this is not particularly related to the fact he's stiff, he was involved in a match in the 2000 Young Lion Cup where he hit a wrestler called Masakazu Fukada with a flying elbow drop. And Fukada actually went into a coma fairly quickly,
Jesus.
And he died 4 days later.
Wow.
One of those awful burdens to carry around, being one of those people who is, you know, within a predetermined sport, you were involved in a match in which one of the competitors died. Whether or not that was a massive effect on Shibata, of course it must have been, you know, to some degree, but he made the decision. And whether it's, again, I think this is all part of that mean streak thing. He seems to me like a bloke who is just very... sort of, I don't know, like he sort of goes, wrestling is not, you know, I'm better than wrestling.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to for me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like people who are like, I do this, but I could actually be doing something else.
Mm.
I hate it when the Undertaker's all like, if UFC had been around, I'd have done that.
Yeah.
Well, do you know what, mate? No one would fucking remember you. You know, A, you'd be called Mark Calloway. B, the UFC was a mess back in the early 90s. See, you were the fucking Undertaker. You're like, oh, I'd rather have done something else. Yeah. Would you?
Have some respect.
Have some fucking respect for the wrestling gimmick that gave you everything that you own. And I slightly find that with Shibata. So Shibata leaves New Japan in 2005. Pretty much, you know, a terrible period for the business. But rather than being like Tanahashi, who stays and basically brings the business up with him, Shibata heads off. He goes to the Japanese independents at the start. And in 2007, he does go into MMA. He's not great.
Right.
So he has 4 wins and 11 losses.
Mm.
He returns to New Japan many years later in 2012. But he did remain independent. He refused to sign a contract with them. He was working other places at the same time. And what he began having there was a big long feud with Goto. They had some big marquee matches. You know, they had draws, which, you know, obviously showing that they were like on the same level. There was nothing to put, sort of put between them. He didn't actually sign a contract with New Japan until 2016, which meant he'd basically been out of New Japan for 11 years.
Mm.
Even when he was working there from, you know, when his first return, he just wouldn't sign a contract.
Right.
And there's something about him. I don't know what it is, but I always, when I know stuff like that, I slightly go off people. I don't know what it is. It's because they're almost like going, this isn't for me, you know. But if it isn't for you, why are you in there hurting people? You know, why don't you go home? You know, now, Goto is one of those guys as well. He's also a very hard-hitting guy. The closest parallel would be Tomohiro Ishii, that he is this big, strong guy, and they've never quite pulled the trigger on him. Goto has really been further than Ishii, and I don't think that is the case. That should have been the case, because I think Ishii is much more sort of exciting and dynamic, and I love him. What this match made me think of it is that period of an earlier New Japan where the main events, this seemed like a very, very big main event from 1997, you know, or the early 2000s, where these two guys who are slightly lacking in charisma, they go together, it starts and you go, okay, well, you know, I'm sure they'll work their socks off. And then within 10 minutes, you're like, I cannot take my eyes off this. And the build of this match is just phenomenal.
Mm.
Some of it does come down to sections where they are just punching each other, where they are hitting each other as hard as they can. And that's part of their tough man thing. And the crowd love it. But look, the last 10 minutes of this, I think you could hold up with any wrestling match ever and just go, what is better? And I think you'd watch this and you go, I think it is that one. You know, it's so electric.
Mm.
It's just thrilling. Probably worth me saying that part of the reason I don't like the stiffness in Shibata's matches is with the benefit of hindsight.
Mm.
So April, after this match, he has a match against Okada for the IWGP Championship. And they'd been going about 30 minutes. And there was a bit where Okada hits his finishing move on Shibata, the Rainmaker clothesline. And Shibata gets straight back up, which he does again and again in this match with Goto, which is really thrilling, where he's just like no selling stuff.
Yeah.
He got straight back up and he just looked at Okada and then gave him a proper full-on headbutt.
Jiminy.
Boom. There was a horrible noise. And it literally, I mean, it's been described as like a melon falling to a wet floor.
Oh, yeah.
That was the noise.
Blah.
Ripples.
Yeah.
Okada goes down and Shibata just stands there smiling at him, and a thin trickle of blood just appears on Shibata's forehead and runs down with the sweat. Shibata loses the match. Following it, he collapsed backstage and they rushed him to hospital. They discovered that the headbutt had given him a subdural hematoma.
Fucking hell.
So he'd burst a blood vessel in his head
and
the blood had then just flooded his brain.
Jesus.
So he was taken for emergency surgery. This sort of injury you do not get by doing it once. You get it by doing a headbutt again and again and again and again.
Right.
And he'd been doing that regularly since the summer of 2016. So every time you watch an old Shibata match where he's being stiff, you are watching the cumulative damage that will end up with him having that subdural hematoma.
Right.
Just basically flood his brain. So
how can you do a headbutt without hurting somebody really badly?
You can't. The only way you can do it is you can do a headbutt to a part of the body that it wouldn't hurt. So you can see in this match with Goto, there's a bit where they exchange headbutts, but they're actually headbutting each other's sort of shoulders, shoulder blades and things like that. They're not doing their heads. If you do it on someone else's head, you are just breaking a shithead. You are a shithead. What happens with Shibata is that he begins to then, you know, he gets paralysis on one side of his body. And they believe that was also slightly down to dehydration. But within a week, it was reported Shibata would never be cleared to wrestle again. That it was, what, 3 years ago? He has never wrestled again.
Right.
He never will wrestle again. They made him a coach at the LA Dojo in America, where he trains sort of, you know, Americans who are basically coming through the New Japan system. He has spoken about it. He made his first appearance back in the G1 Climax Finals, and people were shocked at how unwell he looked.
Right.
He no longer looked like the wrestler. He was very uncertain. He came back into the ring and he tearfully, he shouted, "I am still alive. That is all." And that was really it.
Yeah.
He had no long-term prognosis. He mentioned in an interview that he has had double vision, which basically goes back almost the start of his career from taking damage to his head. And so he's never even been able to see. He's had three operations done on it. But this is all just sort of, the man is just
a lunatic.
I mean, he's done some dangerous stuff. And every time, you know, when I watch a Shibata match where he's stiff.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, why are you doing this to yourself?
You're watching a man having a terrible life-changing injury, and you're watching it by
in
degrees.
Increments, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just uncomfortable to watch. I got to see him, I think, the year before he retired in Rev Pro, where he was wrestling Zack Sabre Jr. And Zack Sabre Jr., British wrestler, very technical. He wrestles an entirely different style to anyone else because he's so technical, you don't do anything physical. That's not to diminish what he does. He's an astonishing performer. But he's so low impact.
Mm.
It's all about holds and you know, stretches and things like that and submissions. And it's an entirely safe thing. So I got to see Shibata wrestle, but not in a way that I actually, I'm glad I didn't see part of that spectacle of him just basically belting seven shades of shit out of his head for entertainment. It is a horrible thing to watch.
Yeah.
That match is spectacular. It's really good. The problem with anything about Shibata now is the hangs
you
over
watch
it.
The prism the, of him being a Caribbean the world.
Of his future tragedy. Yeah.
That is rancid.
Sobering.
That is rancid.
Match number 9.
Ooh.
The IWGP Intercontinental Champion Tetsuya Naito versus Hiroshi Tanahashi.
I call Tetsuya Naito Mr. Saturday Naito because he is dressed like Mr. Saturday Night in the VTs. He's dressed in this beautiful kind of, you'd call him kind of like a horse effectively.
Yeah.
You know those horses that hang outside? And they dress like Saturday Night Fever, kind of.
He comes to the ring in a beautiful plum-coloured suit. It's a really good look.
Yeah.
Very, very rough setup here. What you have in Tanahashi is essentially New Japan's John Cena.
Right, okay.
What you have in Naito is the Roman Reigns. And he's the Roman Reigns because a few years before, they tried to make him the next big star.
Mm.
And the audience rejected it.
Right.
So he has returned. With a fucking attitude. It's lovely, this. Now, that diminishes what they are because they are far more than that. And certainly Tanahashi is far more culturally important in Japan than John Cena is in America.
Mm.
Tanahashi is the ace. He's the record-setting 8-time IWGP champion. He was won the G1 tournament 3 times. So at the time this took place, he'd won it twice. He was a Wrestling Observer Hall of Famer in 2013 while his career was still absolutely at his zenith.
Yeah.
He was named Wrestler of the Decade by the Observer, most charismatic of the decade for the 2010s. A Japanese wrestler is named most charismatic out of all the wrestlers in the 2010s. He was the man really who spearheaded the revival of New Japan from bankruptcy in the mid-2000s into becoming the number two organization in the world, which it is today.
Mm.
His favorite wrestler is Shawn Michaels.
Right.
And you can see a lot of Shawn Michaels, you know, little bits have been taken.
The Zooey Deschanel top knot.
Yes. Yeah. The slightly sort of, you know, blonded bits and bobs. He was seen when he first came along, and he did this quite early on in his career, as being a massive innovator in wrestling because he would say to fans, "I love you," when they cheered him, and he would play an air guitar. And the Japanese were like, "That is very unusual. That is absolutely astonishing." It was really unusual for a Japanese high-level star to show that level of sort of warm charisma until Tanahashi came along. He debuted in 1999. He was part of this new Three Musketeers. New Japan gave him immediately big wins over some sort of big established stars. After that, he got put in a very popular tag team with a guy called Kenzo Suzuki, and they were named the Kings of the Hills. Kenzo Suzuki is funny. There are two good stories come out of this, and unusually for a big Japan star, a little bit of scandal here.
Oh, hello.
So the tag team came to an end when Tanahashi was stabbed in the back by Hitomi Hara, who was a news reporter for TV Asahi.
Wow.
So they had had a relationship. They'd been dating one another. Mm. And he had gone to her Tokyo apartment to say, the relationship is over.
I don't love you.
I'm seeing someone else. And she then she stabbed him a number of times.
Jiminy.
She said she had planned to commit suicide afterwards. Didn't say why she didn't. I mean, it's one of those things. But the court said, you know, they charged her with attempted murder. Mm. But the court did say she was very emotional at the time. And so they sentenced her to 4 years of probation. An amazing sort of result.
He's doing well, huh?
Yeah. Tanahashi did get hospitalized, but he recovered. And the incident made people really like him. He became a big mainstream name. He'd been stabbed by a love rival. And you're a bit like, if that's quite Shawn Michaels, I suppose. You know, that
seems, heartbreak kid.
Yeah, that seems pretty good. Yeah. People wanted to see him return, and his return match was a huge sellout. He did really well. What's funny is the WWE have noticed all this.
Mm.
And they have sent someone over, and they basically said, apparently there's this really, really hot Japanese star. He's in a tag team called King of the Hills. Everybody loves him.
Oh,
and they
get the wrong run.
Yes, they did. So they went in and they ended up signing Kenzo Suzuki.
Like a sketch.
Kenzo Suzuki had the worst run in WWE from 2004 to 2005. He ended up doing rap battles with a pre-famed John Cena. And
that's all he deserves.
Feuded with Billy Gunn.
Right,
there is a funny thing about, you'd watch this if you were Kenzo Suzuki and you go, see how my mate Tanahashi's getting on. And the first thing you see is fucking Billy Gunn running out and you're going, well, that is a slap in the face. They had actually, the WWE wanted to rename him Hirohito as well. But they decided not to.
And this is the tens. Yep. It's not even that long ago.
Not long ago at all. Kenzo Suzuki, I mean, the WWE run ruined his Japanese career.
Mm.
So he was all set for a good, you know, career in some way.
Mm.
He never ever returned to New Japan. He's been working in All Japan Pro Wrestling for the last 10 years. They are much smaller than they were in their heyday. And Kenzo Suzuki is like a forgotten man.
Right.
So sad. He must have thought, I fucking lucked out there. I bet they were after Tanahashi. Who's having a good time now? TikTok. Oh, I'm not doing anything.
I love you.
But for the last decade, Tanahashi has just been the number one performer in Japan. He's a hard-working champion. He's an amazing big match performer.
Mm.
He's an amazing regular performer. He's the professional face of the company.
Yeah.
And everybody fucking loves him. Ah, except for one person. Isn't it? His name is Tetsuya Naito. And so in 2013, they basically had Naito came back from an injury. And New Japan decided to push him. And they did that by having him win the G1 Climax, annual tournament, biggest, toughest tournament in wrestling, you know, every year.
Yeah.
Produces some of the best matches every year without fail. And Naito ends up beating Tanahashi to win the whole thing.
Mm.
And he was really quickly rejected by the New Japan fans. He got booed when he actually won over Tanahashi. We know what Japan is like. An audience to actually boo someone who has worked very hard and been honest and decent is an unusual thing. Seeing how the fans were reacting to them, and this is very much what the WWE should learn from, New Japan just went, we're going to change everything.
Mm.
So the winner of the G1 often gets the Wrestle Kingdom main event. So they announced a fan vote to decide whether or not the IWGP Championship match between Tetsuya Naito and Okada, or an intercontinental match between Shinsuke Nakamura and Tanahashi, which one should be the main event? Well, they've never, ever done it that the main title, which Naito was going for, has not been the main event.
Right.
But the fans voted for the intercontinental one so that Naito did not get his main event at Wrestle Kingdom 8. So he'd been relegated, essentially. That's how unpopular he was.
Yeah.
That they moved the main event down one.
That's incredible.
Because the fans had turned on it so badly.
Yeah.
So he doesn't win the belt from Okada. You'll be unsurprised to hear the booking is not mental. And he basically goes to, as we talked about with Hiromu Takahashi, he goes to Mexico.
Yeah.
And they go, let's have a bit of a break. So while he's there, he joins a heel group called Los Ingobernables.
Mm.
And he basically, when he comes back, he has this image of this heel character who is part of the Ungovernables of Japan this time. So he comes back with a sort of new look, but most importantly, a new attitude. He's obviously not had the greatest time in Mexico. His skills are, you know, without compare. But he's got a new move that he does, and he does it throughout his career from now on, where he opens up his eyes,
yes,
where he does that and looks sort of up at the sky. That is called Abre los Ojos, which is open your eyes.
Right.
And he developed that where he widens his eye with his thumb and his index finger because local Mexican fans would continually hurl racially abused chants at him, which were to do with his eyes being more narrow.
Right.
So his thing there is opening up his eye, and it's also a big fuck you to the fans, to the racist fans.
Yeah.
Don't hear so much about the racist Mexicans, do you?
No.
I was disappointed by that.
I mean, I think...
suffered enough? They then have to deal with the poison of internal racism.
Yeah, I think people from the East get that fucking everywhere. And a lot this year, I imagine. Mm,
yeah, I should think so. Christ. Mm. What's interesting is his move, which is a fuck you, and there is a certain amount of, you know, that is, if you like, Japanese pride.
Yeah.
You are, you know, doing that. The it's been, his taunt has been taken since then by the baseball player Shinsuke Ogasawara and also Yuki Kashiwagi of AKB48.
Oh, nice.
So the pop band.
Little girl band.
Yeah.
From Akihabara.
She has been rocking the Abre los Ojos. When he comes back, he is, you know, got this new heel attitude, and people immediately fucking love it. And they are like, this is great. He uses the fact he was rejected by the fans as the motivation to sort of go, I'm going to be huge and I'm going to do it with no respect for you people.
Yeah.
And what he does is when they give him this belt, which he wins from the Intercontinental belt, which he wins from Michael Elgin, he just has a series of matches that are astonishing. The quality of them is off the scale throughout 2016. But he begins treating the belt with no respect. So he will bring it to the ring and he'll knock it and smash it on tables as he's coming down. And he'll just chuck it up in the air and it'll fall on the floor and he'll walk over it. And again, it's just, it's weirdly, when you watch that, you are like, that is quite strong.
Yeah.
I don't know
someone's
why that's so
that.
Strong.
I mean, that's a piece of engineering.
Yeah.
Someone's made that.
Yeah, and he
master
knocks
craftsman.
It about. It would all be battered. It would be cracked. It would have like lumps coming off it. And he'd put it in the ring and he'd chuck it in and he'd sort of like kick at it. It was all brilliant.
Yeah,
he just...
Wonderful.
So good. That year, 2016, he was named Tokyo Sports' MVP in all of Japanese professional wrestling. And that marked the first time since 2010, so 6 years, that the award wasn't won by either Hiroshi Tanahashi or Kazuchika Okada.
Right.
So he's really suddenly broken through.
Yeah.
He's finally arrived. It's 3 years later than what they planned. And now he's getting revenge on the man who represents the fans, sort of, that he wasn't able to be better than, that the fans rejected him. So what a long build storyline that you basically can build by going, this isn't working, go out for a bit, come back in. Now you're in and look at this story. Just so simply and beautifully done, elegant. This match, Pete. Oh, I mean, you know, there's a whole thing as well about Tanahashi as the goody-goody fighting for this belt, which Naito has no respect for. Tanahashi wants it so badly. Naito is like, are you fighting for this shit? You know, but he wants to win because he doesn't want Tanahashi to have something he wants. The two of them together. Now, this is the problem for me for the next two matches.
Right.
I'm going to suggest something here, which may not be popular. I have a thing where you cannot describe the beauty of what happens in these matches, right? Pete, let me spend half an hour on this podcast and I will perfectly encapsulate the beauty of a sunset, okay?
Yeah.
It's round.
Yellow.
There are...
birds sometimes.
Birds, trees.
Red,
I can see some
sky.
Trees.
Sky's a bit red sky. Sometimes.
Dark at the back,
yeah.
Light there,
mm.
Slowly going down, degrees, right? What's Venice sober. Like? Should we do Venice? What's Venice
water.
Like?
Water. Wet. Imagine buildings, but there's water at the
covered
bottom.
Covered in
no, Italians. Not a puddle. Stop being a cunt.
There is no point. And no. So to go through this, you can say, oh, it's one of the best like wrestling matches you've ever seen in your life. How can you do more than that? What can I add to that?
Watch it. Go and watch it.
It's there's no point talking about it because all it will do is diminish it. It's a very beautiful woman. Yeah, she's got a nose. It sort of bends out of the... Diminishing it.
She's got rabbit ears.
Yeah, diminishing.
she makes my belly feel funny.
Peter than Peter.
Peter than Peter.
That everyone would always go, oh, I didn't. And you'd be like, no, she's a lady.
It's not a rabbit.
Yeah, so it's not a rabbit.
It's not
a
cartoon rabbit. It's not cartoon.
Is it a male rabbit? Is it Peter Rabbit? No, it's very different.
Is that
different.
Where Peter comes from, do you reckon? Because Peter's not a name
it
that anyone
be.
Has. Yeah, Peter Rabbit.
She's a rabbit. And
she's a
like,
rabbit and name's Peter.
Oh, you look like a Peter Rabbit. Someone said one night, you know. Oh,
Peter Rabbit.
Yeah.
Yeah, confusing.
I think it is.
Yeah, probably is.
I am not going.
Give her a text. Give her an email.
I am not going to start trying to describe this match. Because no. You've either seen it and you go, yes. Oh, you haven't, and you're lucky. You're fucking lucky. You get to watch that. Honestly,
you sound like Dennis Nielsen, where he's interviewed and he talks about. He says, and then I played. It was obviously I watched that show with Doctor Who in it. Mm. And he's going, well, I played the song "Album by the Rolling Stones." I mean, I wasn't never hearing that before. It's like, yeah, I guess so.
It is not. The only thing I've got in common with Dennis Nielsen, we live in similar
yeah,
areas.
Yeah, yeah.
First yeah, of all. My cousin actually lived in his, I've told you the story before, but my cousin moved into his murder flat.
Remember when it used to always go on sale and you used to point it out and go, Pete, look at this.
Do you know a bit like this? I mean, for Dennis Nielsen, if we were putting it through, Dennis Nielsen would have seen some fucking sights and you'd say to him, what was it like? You know, why did you do it? And you go, you sort of, you know, you're going to have to find yourself in a similar situation.
Is that the man
you
who know, did Up All Night on Five Live? Rod Sharp.
Rod Sharp.
Rod Sharp. That's
Rod Sharp has
night.
Never murdered. You know, itinerant
he's not
men.
Even up all night. He is in America, so he's on. He's up during the day.
I'm
Rod Sharp, and I've been up murdering all night.
If you said to Dennis Nielsen, describe it, you go, well, there's no point describing the feeling, I mean, you know, entirely ruining, you know, the sensation, you know. I am like, Den, I totally get you, mate, because I was asked to basically do a summary of Hiroshi Tanahashi taking on Tetsuya Naito at Wrestle Kingdom 17.
Yeah.
Said, and
impossible.
Put it there, mate, I'd say. No touching. Sorry. Just, I don't know if you heard what I was saying, but actually it was. Actually, quite a moment. Thank you.
Hello, how you doing? Pete Oz here from Wrestle Meet. Now, something went a little bit wrong on the old DAT tape, on the old wax cylinder at this point in the recording, so we lost about 2 minutes of recording, which basically encapsulated the end of Wrestle Kingdom, I think episode 3, and the start of our final episode, episode 4. But don't worry, we didn't miss any of the magic. We collected all of the tragic, and you can listen to everything over on the Patreon right now, patreon.com/WrestleMe, or just wait till next week and you'll have the final episode of Wrestle Kingdom 11. Wrestle Me, Mark.
Wrestle Me, Pete! I think you're really sexy.
I know, Mark. Stop it.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
time now.
I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Anna Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.